Okay, so.
We made a podcast.
Well, we haven't yet, but we're going to.
We're making a podcast. This is our first time.
And I guess the topic we're talking about today is, why did we move away from California to move to Texas to move back to California? Yeah.
I think that, I guess the first thing we should probably explain is why we left California.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason is we were living with my parents and my brother and his wife and his three kids and three dogs, and it wasn't enough space for all of us to live comfortably. And I mean, just during pregnancy, you can explain how difficult it was in the situation we were at.
Well, I mean, I feel like talking about living with parents should be elaborated on, because I feel like today's culture looks down on that a lot. Yeah. And even when we dated, I remember one of our first dates, you brought up, like, I still live with my parents. Is that a problem? And I basically was like, why would that be a problem? You're saving money. And I mean, honestly, I think more people should live at home.
I think honestly, it's a stigma from the dating culture in our generation that, like, I want a guy that's 6'5" and has, you know, $500,000 and has his own house and there's just like a...
Haven't you heard the clip from, like, yeah, TikTok that says, like, I'm looking for a guy in finance.
Yeah.
6'5", blue eyes.
Like, yeah, no, it's... I think after dating people, you hear all the different types of things that... I mean, there's obviously an exception of people that don't care, but there are a lot of people
that
are
rare.
Like, yeah, it is rare. It's a lot more rare than people think. And you talk to, like, many people, I mean, you watch other podcasts and stuff, people are like, I want a guy that's, like, in his career and is fully accepted, blah, blah,
blah. Well,
it's
not just podcasts, like, all of your friends. Yeah. I mean, even you really didn't date much till we really met, and yeah, all your friends knew, like...
Well, I went on dates, but I didn't actually, like, have a girlfriend for an extended amount of time. I went on dates.
But why didn't you have a girlfriend?
Because they didn't, and nothing ever clicked.
I know, but yeah. I'm trying to get to the point of, like, you had an expectation of, like, what yeah, you were looking for in dating, which was somebody who you saw, like, a real future with.
Yeah. I wanted someone, speaking of real, I wanted someone that was, like, real. I didn't want someone that was just, like, wanted this fantasy that was already made up. Like, I've watched a lot of big, like, financial people that are, like, are well off, and... they're all like, find someone before you make money or before you get wealthy, because then you know they stuck with you through the hard times and the downsides. Because if you have someone that's like, oh, I just want to jump on when you already did all the work yourself, it's like, you're not going through the growth with that person.
And like, how do you know that their care yeah, for you is yeah, authentic?
Or if it's just your status. It's like, oh, he's got the needs I want, blah, 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 blah. It's like, you have to, I feel like growing with someone makes it all way more, like, not important, but it's more special and it's more meaningful when you grow with somebody than just finding someone that's already done it all on his own.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the times the guys that do that on their own, they're very particular on who they date. And it's like, I've had friends that were, like, well off, and they didn't treat women like a girlfriend or a wife. It's like they use them as, like, well, I got my time off, I'm gonna just, it's just a casual thing. It's like they're very,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know.
No, I think you see that. I mean, there's a lot of very rich and famous people that struggle to either find authentic people to date. And I mean, when we started dating too, like, you were still in real estate, but you didn't have consistent income. And, like, even that, you were worried to tell me. Like, I mean, I think there's three things that you were worried to tell me. One, most of your friends were girls. You were living at home, and you didn't have consistent income. And
I was coaching, too. So, coaching. But that's not consistent income.
I'm not saying yeah, that I knock against you. I'm just yeah, saying, like, a lot of my girlfriends have this expectation for men that's crazy. It's like they want them to be making well over six figures. They want them to have their own house already, or yeah, they need to be a certain height or certain this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
And they don't even give them a chance.
No.
Like, in the dating world.
No.
And so for us, like, I mean, our dating story started with, like, basically, I super liked you, and then you didn't like me.
No, I started off, I liked you first. And then you're like, I don't think I should date, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, that's a long story. We'll get to another time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But basically, we ended up being friends for the first year.
Yeah.
And as part of that first year, we decided to start a business together because I was working from home. I had time on the weekends. You had bandwidth. We had very similar interests. And our passions aligned, like, in that way. So, anyway, fast forward. I had been renting with a friend at the time, and it just made sense for me to move in. And we were renting essentially the granny flat in your parents' house.
Yeah.
And that worked out great for us almost for a whole year. Like,
I wouldn't say great. I mean, we had a king-size bed that was stuck into, like, a corner, and when she was pregnant, you couldn't get out. And that this goes into the reason why we needed more space in a bigger room, is that you were stuck trying to get your belly off the king-size bed in a corner.
Right. And that's part of the story. But I think starting from the beginning, even just at the like before the pregnancy came into play and all of that, renting a space for under $1,000, especially in Orange County, is incredible. Or free.
Yeah.
And you get the help of your family. The point I'm trying to make is I don't think there should be this stigma of shame around living at home.
Yeah.
Like, that's especially like in our economy where the interest rates are crazy.
Prices
buying
are crazy.
A house is crazy.
Gas is crazy.
I mean, the current like groups, average, I mean, I'm not talking statistically like across the world, but just within our friend group, like the average income is about 65 grand, maybe 70 on the high end.
Yeah.
And so like trying to buy a house in California isn't even a fantasy. It's like past that.
Yeah.
So anyway, we started out at that house. We obviously got pregnant. I think I was actually pregnant before I moved in.
You were. It was right. It was like, it was almost like within a couple of weeks of you finding out you're pregnant and then moving in.
Yeah. And another side tangent. We had talked before I got pregnant and basically said marriage wasn't really my priority. And the next commitment for us was having a kid, and we both wanted a family.
Yeah.
So even though we had obviously feelings for each other and we were dating actually
at
that point, like she was planned. So not that it matters. Like you can have an unplanned pregnancy and still have a wonderful relationship with that person.
Yeah.
But anyway, so clear, just to give some context to the timeline. So lived with your parents, the space got really tight towards the end. So like my 7th month of pregnancy, the way our bed was situated in the room, essentially it was wedged in the back, and the only way you could get out
was a wall that got like a 7-foot wall.
Yeah, across, it was completely enclosed besides the foot of the bed. So if you had to get up, you had to literally crawl
scooch
out.
Scooch your butt. Yeah, like scooch, like a butt scooch out of the bed.
Yeah, you literally had to like pull me out of the bed towards the end. I was like a beached whale.
Yeah.
And then we started sleeping sideways. Yeah. Like I literally slept on the foot of the bed and you were tucked in the corner.
Yeah. And then I had to get I had to crawl over you to like get out of the bed.
It was really challenging.
Yeah.
And then, especially after we had the baby, like having a bedside.
And we had Maple too.
Maple's our dog.
Yeah, Maple is a big girl, and I mean, she loved being in that house, but she needed more space too.
There wasn't a yard. There was good things that came out of that, but I think talking about like before we even decided on Texas, it was like, okay, I need to be able to get out of the side of my bed. And so you brought up moving out of state.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to talk about that?
I mean, the big thing is we were never going to afford anything in California at the time. Like this is what, 2022?
Mm-hmm.
And, everything was still insane from COVID. Like the prices were through the roof, interest rates were through the roof. And I mean, with the income we had, we couldn't have afforded anything, in California. And I feel like the only option we really had was to go to somewhere where there was somebody that could help us a little bit, you know, at least with her parents being out here, and somewhere that was a lot cheaper. And getting a 3,400 square foot house with a pool on 0.3 of an acre for $290,000 just was the only option we could have. I mean, there was plenty of other states that we could have gone to, but it would just be us alone, which I don't think that was our priority the first year of having a baby, being all alone.
Well, just backing up a little bit, we did look pretty extensively at other states.
Yeah.
And part of our choice of moving to Texas, not a big part, but having family help was really high on our list just because of how expensive childcare is. So, I mean, what states did we look at? I don't even remember.
There's about like 5 states, maybe 6, that I liked. I did a lot of research on prices, taxes, natural disasters, political views, etc. And I think I dwindled down to the ones I liked were Idaho, Utah, Kentucky, Tennessee. Maybe a South Carolina, but that wasn't really high up on the list. Maybe North Carolina. But I think that the Carolinas were and Tennessee were all the three that were kind of getting really populated. That I mean, even like Boise area got super populated too. So it was hard. We would have to have been out of the main area of those states to afford it.
And I think if I remember right, you had looked up like property tax, income tax on all those states, and those states were essentially in our benefit.
Yeah.
Which was a big reason why they ended up in that list.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Texas was in there because that was where our family was, but their property tax is pretty brutal here, but they have no income tax, so it kind of balances out in a way. But, I mean, that's the negative of Texas, I mean, and the heat.
So, I mean, okay, we're in this house now, but, you know, we've been thinking about what's our next move. And we've been looking a lot more at new construction because originally we had honestly started the process of building a new home in a new neighborhood.
Yeah.
It ended up falling through for a number of reasons. One, the paperwork never came, which made me uncomfortable. I didn't want to keep going forward. And if you could just talk a little bit more about like mud tax and like if people are looking at Texas as a possibility for them, that was new information for me.
Yeah. So mud tax in Texas, it's like a property tax, but it's mainly for new construction communities. They incorporate like all your the schooling, the sidewalks, the parks, the I mean, they put everything that you would get in like an HOA, a property tax, etc., into a lien called mud tax that is really high in because it's already high in Texas, and it just like exasperates the height in these new construction communities because they have to pay down their debts of the land that they bought. So if you bought a new construction in Texas and you bought it for, I mean, the prices are very reasonable in these new construction communities because, I mean, in my opinion, it's because you're paying so much in this mud tax. It jumps from like the average, I think, in Texas is close to like 2% property tax. But in these other communities, it's about 3.2%, which when you add that to a $300,000 house, I mean, you're paying $800, $900 in property tax every month, which is a crazy number added on top of your mortgage.
Well, and that's on the low side because the first house we were looking at.
That's one of the cheaper houses you can get in those neighborhoods. It's close to $300,000.
I mean, I don't even remember finding much else for under $300.
No, yeah. I mean, there's very few that are like $280s, and you still have to buy all the upgrades. Like, if you want a base house that you're, I don't know if you're really a love. I mean, who depends on the person. I mean, but yeah, there's really not much under. I mean, you can't get much under, like, unless you, okay, so let me take that back. If you want something that's way smaller in square footage, you can get something probably in, like, 250s area, 250, 260s.
Yeah.
But we were looking at something that was, like, 2,000 square feet around or a little bit more, and that was jumped you immediately up to, like, 290 to 350.
And I felt like I had a preconceived notion moving to Texas would be like a super cheap place to live. And then even, I mean, just the new construction was pretty much off the table because, okay, great, our mortgage is $1,600 and then we have $1,000 mud tax.
I mean, it would have been $1,900. I mean, for what we want, it would be $1,900 for...
I'm just giving an example.
Yeah.
So you know, if people don't want to buy new construction, I don't know if you mentioned, but the mud tax, as time goes on and as that loan, essentially, that neighborhood community is paying for the infrastructure to be put in.
Yeah.
And so as that gets paid down, the mud tax does decrease.
It does, but it takes years and years. Yeah. So
it's not like something you're going to turn around and see change
drastically. No.
So, I mean, that leads into the other question, which is like, you know, if you're looking to move into Texas, what about an older home? So that's the route we ended up taking. Mm-hmm. And you have been very much, you know, just available to look at the market. Mm-hmm. And so Matt actually flew out to Texas to take a look at some of the houses, and he found this neighborhood and he just said, wow, this is like such a nice neighborhood. I want the shittiest house I can buy here.
Yeah.
Which is what we ended up doing. And the house that we're in now, you had driven by.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell that story?
Yeah. So, I mean, there was another house in this neighborhood that I was going to look at. And when I drove by this house that we're in now, it was already on in escrow. And I was like, oh, that's a bummer, because that's the biggest, crappiest house in the neighborhood. And it would have been super cheap. And it was already in escrow. And then 2 months later, it actually came back onto the market. And I, me and Christina, we talked about this and we're like, I mean, do we want to, I mean, my whole process, if we're going to buy an older house, is if we can get it for a really cheap price and put sweat equity into it, we'll make a good chunk of money, and that would benefit us long-term. Cause it's going to, we are having it at such a low price, but, I mean, we can go into all the work we've done, because it was not at all what we were expecting. I mean, we saw the house, like we saw how crappy it was, but we didn't.
I think it's unfair to say it's crappy, because
it
the
was
house,
crappy. It was.
Well, I would still say, I'm going to reframe that and say this house had a lot of potential.
Yeah.
It was a huge house. There was a bonus room. Even when we did all the inspections, everything came back relatively clear. There wasn't a ton of major issues. So, yeah, there was tile. Yeah, there was wallpaper. Yeah, every single room needs to be painted. The ceiling script. There's so much that went into it.
New floor, yeah.
But in a neighborhood where the median value of a house is $500,000, you know, it was listed originally for like $340,000, $350,000. Long story short, we ended up getting it for $290,000.
Yeah.
So, like, for this size of square footage in this type of a neighborhood, being in proximity to a major college, was a gold mine for us. So, you know, we came out here with the intention to be pretty open-minded. If it didn't work out in a year, we were open to moving back. And if we were here for 5 years, if it just, like, our family life was okay and we were hanging in there, you know, we'd be in it for the long run. So before we get to that decision, tell them a little bit about the work we have done.
Yeah, I mean, so my dad and I, when we flew out here, we...
Hold on, we have to tell them. We had our baby in September last year.
Yes. So Emerson and Christina flew out to her parents that are an hour away from this house. And they started living there with the grandparents while my dad and I were at this house working on it.
Hold on, because I think I really want to emphasize, she was 2 months old, barely.
Yeah.
So we were still in the throes of newborn life.
Yes.
Like,
oh, we were exhausted.
Literally not sleeping. And I mean not sleeping, like 2 hours maybe.
Yeah.
And we were falling apart.
Yeah.
And amongst all that, we were packing, and at a month and a half old, because I think it was 3 or 4 weeks before we moved out here, we had all of our stuff picked up. So we had nothing. It's like all these beautiful baby gifts we had been given.
Yeah, definitely.
Literally
used any of it.
Boxed up.
I mean, we didn't use any of them.
Didn't
I mean, she
use
was,
anything,
by the time we got here and like situated and everything, she was already grown out of all of her brand new clothes that everyone just bought her.
Yeah, I don't know what possessed us. Partially, I think that was into play was that I was on maternity leave.
Yeah.
So me being fully available to take care of the baby while you started construction with the intent of having it relatively done before I went back to work in January, that was the goal. So I want to make sure that's added into the story, because there's a huge part of that where we were literally washing pump parts and bottles in a disgusting bathroom upstairs with construction dust everywhere.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And it was
Yeah.
Probably one of the hardest things we've ever done.
I mean, I feel like honestly I want to start back a little bit. So let's, after you flew out here with the baby and went to your parents' house. When I did the drive, I want to kind of emphasize that drive. So my dad and I, Emerson got COVID right before we actually flew out, a couple weeks before we flew out.
And it's 2 weeks and she's okay.
Yeah, she's fine. I mean, it was
horrible.
Yeah.
She was not breathing. So much story to tell. Yeah.
But
we can't just glaze over that. We have to share.
I mean, they gave her Tylenol and she was fine.
We spent 6 hours in the emergency room for them to do x-rays and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah, and not take her blood and make her scream and cry. I mean, it was excruciating.
Okay, that was the first worst day of our life.
Yeah, that was horrible.
So she ended up being okay after like 4 days. And then you had surgery.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I had surgery right after that.
I think.
Yeah.
Was it after?
It was after that. Yeah.
So you were out of commission. I was taking care of the baby, having a horrible time breastfeeding.
Yeah.
You literally had a gaping hole that was healing.
On my butt cheek, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know if you wanted to share that. Yeah, it was in his butt cheek.
Yeah.
He couldn't sit. He could only lay down.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We were all in diapers.
Literally all three of us in diapers.
Yeah.
It was... I don't know if I want to laugh or cry, but
it was not convenient.
I was still healing from stitches. Like it was.
Baby was obviously.
I don't know why we did any of that.
I don't know. Well, I mean,
the timeline had already been locked in.
It was already locked in. Everything was already locked in.
Paperwork was done, so we were going.
Our moving truck was already. Yeah,
okay. I mean, like,
so
it gives you the context. Everyone was sick.
So I'm recovering from surgery, and I have to go. So the closing of the house, I had to be there to sign papers. It couldn't have been done electronically. So my dad and I had to just get up and go. I actually got COVID a few days maybe before that trip started. So I have a huge healing
butt wound.
And I have COVID and I have to drive 24 hours straight My dad and I stopped in El Paso, but...
you almost died in El Paso.
So, yeah, so when that 12 hours was...
The first day.
Yeah, the first day was, like, it was fine. The drive's fine, but I was feeling so sick. And I had Maple in the car, and she was absolutely traumatized by being in the car for 12 hours. Once we got to El Paso, we got there at 11 o'clock at night, and we had some food and then went to bed. And my dad and I were going to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I was going to get... a few hours of sleep and then do the next 12 hours. And my dad woke up at like 1 o'clock in the morning and turned on the light, went to the bathroom and it woke me up. And I woke up and I was like coughing and I had a crazy fever and I had the worst chills and I was like not feeling good. And my dad's like, well, do you want to get up and just start driving now then? And I was like, well, I guess there's really no other choice. We can't just stay here. And once my dad started getting ready and stuff, like everything, all my symptoms increased dramatically. And I felt like I couldn't move. Like that was probably the most exhausting, like feeling of sickness I've had in a long time. And
your dad went to the store.
I sent my dad to, like, Dad, I need medicine to be able to drive for another 12 hours. So I do not feel good. And I almost thought I needed to go to the emergency room because something didn't feel right. Like it hit me so hard that I didn't think that something was right. And I was like, I didn't know what to do. My dad got medicine. So my dad picked up, my dad is not the best nurturer. So he doesn't know what medicine to buy. He doesn't know, blah, blah, blah. So
he bought the whole shelf.
He bought like six different things and a thing of crackers and said, and Pedialyte. So... he gave me the big chunk of Pedialyte, some little crackers, and said, eat this, drink this, and then take all these. And I was like, so like, well, I got to just do, I'm just going to do it because I need to go and I need to feel good. So I took DayQuil, this stuff for your lungs. I forgot what it was called. And then he also gave me Mucinex. I forgot what the term was, but it's pretty much Mucinex PM. So it had sleeping medicine in the Mucinex when I had 2 hours of sleep at 1 o'clock in the morning.
And you're mixing all of these together.
And I mixed them all together, and I'm sick, and I'm I just had surgery, and I just drove 12 hours.
And Maple was having a panic attack in the back of the car.
It was horrible. I get on the road, and the Mucinex PM, like right as I get on the freeway, I started feeling the effects of the Mucinex PM because I was already tired. And I almost thought I was going to die. Like, I was like, I'm going to crash. I can't see straight. I'm like, I almost feel like I was hallucinating. And I called my mom, and I was just like, I was in disbelief of what was going on. And I was like, there's really nothing I can do. And I just felt like I was going to die the whole trip, the whole way back. And yeah.
Well, didn't you guys, like, try and take a shortcut, too? Because you have to tell that part. You tried to take a shortcut, and it took you on that road into nowhere.
Yeah, so once I had to fight off the Mucinex PM for 4 or 5 hours of that drive. Like, I was like, I had the AC blasting full blast on my face to keep me awake and rolling down the windows, blah, blah, blah. So once the stun started coming up and all the medicine started taking into effect, that's when we took a faster route, in quotes, faster. And it took you on this road that was a 4 or 5 hour road in the middle of nowhere, like no cell service, no gas stations, no houses, like literally nothing for 5 hours straight on this road. And the road was old. And so it was bumpy and shaking for hours and hours of driving on this. And, I mean, I don't even have to get into like the whole driving experience, but it was just, the whole thing was just ridiculous.
So before you went on that road, I think you called me because you called me and you're like, I think I'm gonna die in El Paso. And that was pretty much the extent of our conversation.
That's how I felt. Yeah.
So I'm you know, out in Huntsville, which is an hour away from Bryan, and
13 hour ways from El Paso,
right? Very far away from you. I know that, I don't know, it was like noon or something, 1 o'clock, you guys had to sign the papers. I had been getting called from...
four. Okay.
I had been called by the movers the day before. Like, we need to come drop off your stuff tomorrow. And I'm trying to coordinate with them. You can't. I don't have the keys to the house. There's nowhere for you to put it. I need you to come the day after. And they were insistent. There was, like, nothing they can do. They were basically saying they were going to drop it off in our driveway. And they were going to leave.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure out, Emerson, again, is only 2 months old. So I can't leave her because I'm still feeding her at this point. Matt's calling me at, I don't know, it was early in the morning saying, I'm going to die in El Paso. The movers are coming. The electronic or the real paperwork needs to be signed. And
only by me and my dad.
Right. So after I got that phone call, it was 4 hours. I didn't hear from him. So I legitimately thought you died for a minute.
Yeah, I had no cell service.
And I'm just panicking, running around the house. So my mom is able to take care of Emerson. So I drive over to Bryan, essentially, to meet the moving truck, to meet the real estate agent so you can sign the papers, all that stuff. And I literally couldn't get a hold of you until you literally drove up. So. And thank God the movers ended up being delayed.
Yeah.
So you guys ended up showing up right around the same time I did.
Yeah, they actually got you into the house right before we even got there.
Like, the difference...
You guys were... Everything was in the one room by the time we got here, all the moving stuff.
It was a difference of 9 minutes.
Yeah.
I showed up, I got the key, they were able to drop the key off for us.
Yeah.
The movers came, and the second the movers were done, you guys pulled in. Yeah. And we were able to sign the papers. So, it all worked out, but it was a nightmare.
And that was the start of chaos right there. That was like... I mean, after that got done, I mean, the amount of stuff we did to this house, I mean, we tore up all the floor, we ripped off all the paper, we blew out walls, we just got rid of all the old stuff, and it was, I mean, I don't even know, I mean, I could go on and on about how much we did to the house.
Let's try to be more specific, because painting a picture, if you haven't seen the photos, when you walk into this house, there is tile truly on every single floor. Every piece of wood in this house is old. It's like that orange yellow wood. It smells weird.
There was mold under wood.
There was mold on top of, there was a hole in the downstairs master bedroom. Rats were coming in and it pooped everywhere. There was dead bugs everywhere. And this is home sweet home. Like, you and Mike lived in this house during the entire construction.
Yeah.
There were cigarette butts upstairs, like, on the shelves. Like, it was so gross. And, you know, to come from, I'm almost going to die in El Paso, to, okay, time to get started and work because we have a limited time frame to get this done, was crazy.
And I still had COVID for the first week of working. And I also think my wound got infected and I had to get on antibiotics too. And then I had to continue working. And my dad was very, what's the right word?
He was very
adamant.
Focused.
He was very adamant at getting up at early in the morning and getting to work ASAP. And he had no leniency. It was like, I had to be on like a strict schedule to get things done, even if I was feeling sick.
It's true, but we had limited time with him. He needed to be back by Christmas, and we had a very small window to get 3,500 square feet complete enough for us to live in. So it was difficult. And I think you used the right word earlier, which is your dad's not the most nurturing. Like, he's extremely effective and very smart in a lot of things.
Yeah.
Just not when it comes to, like, it's okay.
Personal things.
Yeah, like, personal care. Yeah. Like, just toughen up and get it done.
Yeah.
So it was really hard on top of you hadn't seen the baby.
Oh, my gosh. And that was probably one of the hardest things. I couldn't sleep at night. Because, when you just had a newborn baby, like, they're... The amount of different things that were, the chemicals that were, like, released in my body, that was, like, I literally felt like I was, like, I would cry at night because I didn't have my baby. Because I was, like, I just had her for a month and a half, and now I don't even get to see her, and I don't know what's happening. I don't know if anything happens to her. I'm not there. Like, I just felt like, I was like, had a piece of me like ripped away from me, and I just had to keep going. It was horrible.
I mean, even after we had her at the hospital, it was the first night you had not slept well because you were on the awful couch.
Yeah.
And we had decided together that you needed to go home and get some rest.
I think that was night two. Yeah.
And so when we decided that, like, it was special in the sense that, like, I love how caring you are as a father and a partner. Like, you were in tears too when you left that day, leaving us. Like, that was the worst drive, you said to me. It was the worst drive ever because...
It's been a lot of very bad drives.
It was a hard year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, moving out here and then going from a lifestyle of, hey, we're going to the beach, we're hanging out with friends, like... We lived in, essentially, it was a commune. Your brother was an amazing caterer, and he cooks a lot, and he would always have food ready for us. Your mom did the same thing. It was just like somebody was always cooking. We were always together. To then go to living with a toilet that doesn't work, a shower that's yellow and gross. You don't have your baby. You don't have your dog. You don't have your wife. You have nothing. And just to, like, wake up and grind and do that hard work. And you were learning. You were jumping in right away with your dad. That was a big piece, too. You had learned a lot from YouTube on how to do it yourself. But your dad had the experience.
Yeah.
So it was very, like, I don't know, yin and yang. Like, we needed your dad and we needed you to work. But also, you couldn't work well being so sick.
And, I mean, all the other emotions I had. Like, it was just really, really difficult. And I didn't know what I was doing, so I was trying to learn. I was trying not to, it was just really, really hard, a really hard time to get it all figured out.
And even just with the simple things, like, you would go to Lowe's, like, 7, 8, 9 times a day, because you'd get there, and it's like, okay, hey, can you buy me the screw? And you get to the screw aisle, and there's 4,500 screws.
Yeah.
And so you buy a screw, you come back, not the right screw. Okay, go back, bring it back, not the right screw. Yeah. Wait, yeah, you got the screw, but now we need insulation, or now we need this. And it was... just a very defeating process.
Yeah, I never got a list to go get a bunch of different things. It was like, I'll go get one thing and then come back. And it was like, I wanted to explain to my dad, just give me a list of as much as you can that we need, and I'll go get it. And he just said, I don't know what we need. So I would just have to go back and forth 100 times. And I have, like, PTSD from those in Home Depot now. Like, I don't ever want to go back there.
Yeah, don't blame you. Yeah. It feels very foreign going into those stores, not knowing what we're doing. So... From the DIY experience and renovating this home, what would be your top like three tips to someone if they were going to go this route that we did, which is buying an older home and fixing it up?
I mean, obviously the main one is knowing what you're doing. I think the big thing that helped us get this thing done was that my dad speaks Spanish, and we didn't have a lot of money, so we had to limit our things. So my dad picked up workers and spoke Spanish to them, and they would come over and they would work with us, and they do it for a very reasonable price. Like, some of the quotes I got from other things, they were just crazy. So having the experience, whether it be you or a family member or friends, whatever it is, that is huge, knowing what you're doing, because there's the amount of tools and amount of little things that go into every single project is crucial.
So knowing the right people,
yeah,
and having the right experience.
I mean, the people and the experience kind of go hand in hand, if unless you already know it. I would say, I mean, there's so many more than three things. Another thing is tools. That's another huge thing. So experience, obviously, you have to have your tools. Like, my dad couldn't get anything done if we didn't have the tools that we needed. And they are expensive. So make sure that you have a bunch of tools that will get the job done.
And I think with that too, you know, sometimes we look at contractors, the pricing, because we've had multiple contractors do different work for us for different reasons. And yeah, it sounds expensive. Sure, you could do it for cheaper. The materials are cheaper, but you don't have the tools. You don't have the knowledge. You don't have the time.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when you look at those prices, it's pretty honest with, you know,
depends.
Just the experience. It does depend. But like with the windows, we did not have the tools.
No.
But they had to do that, and the experience to get up as high as they did.
And they customized our windows, so our windows were so weird.
They are. Okay. Give us your last tip. If you had to think out of all the things that you learned.
Think outside the box. So everyone, I mean, at least, so I was new coming into all this construction stuff. Like, I knew a little bit about just like hammers, nails, screws, screw guns. I mean, I could do like a little DIY projects, but I couldn't rip up flooring and put in down new flooring, all that stuff. But what I realized, a lot of the stuff that my dad had his experience on was very old knowledge. And I always came in and asked about, I would just question everything because I was curious and I needed to know, like, is that the best and fastest solution? And a lot of the times I would just think outside of what the old way of thinking was, and it would be so much more efficient. It would be easier to do. And I always got, oh, the easier way is not always the right way. It's like, as long as you're getting everything done in the right strength, like getting it, I don't know.
Give an example specifically. So because I think there is an extent getting it, or like doing something faster doesn't always mean it's doing it right.
So no, I wasn't doing it faster. It was doing it smarter than fast.
So give me a real example.
Let me think. I feel like I'll have to think about what.
Okay, you think about that for a second, and I'll share my takeaway from this experience.
Yeah.
Having a plan is extremely important, because I felt like we kept doing the ADHD dance of, okay, we're going to start this and then start that and do this and that. And then we ended up with buying just a ton of materials for things, doing half projects before starting on something new. And it felt for me very overwhelming to do tasks like that. So having an actual plan of like, we're going to start in this room and we're going to go room by room and we're going to take it step by step, I think would help with a lot of the stressors that we experienced, just as a result of we were trying to take on the full 3,500 square feet all at once. And I wish we had done it a little different. I mean, it's turned out okay, and we've learned more than we could have ever had just from, I don't know, watching videos or trying to train ourselves on it.
Yeah.
You really can't learn this stuff unless you're in it doing it.
Yeah. I guess the one example I have is, so I had a demo the whole entire downstairs shower,
mm-hmm.
and it was all tile, all old tile. And my dad, I had the tools, so luckily I had the tools, and he said, take out all the tile. I was like, okay. And he explained to me, okay, take this one tile out at a time and just start chipping away and taking off chunks of it. And after 30, 40 minutes of hammering those tiles, I was like, this is not the best way to do this. So what I did instead is I grabbed a different tool and I just ripped out all the drywall around the tile and then just took the whole entire wall down because we're going to put new drywall up there anyways. So I just ripped off all the, I mean, that was one situation of like the old way his thought process was take out each chunk of tile and just start tearing it down. I just took down the whole entire wall that had the tile on it.
Yeah.
And I just ripped that completely off. And that took me maybe after 40 minutes of tearing out each tile, it took me maybe 5 minutes to take down the whole wall. And that was way faster and more efficient.
Yeah, and I think knowing that you were going to replace the drywall plays into that because it seems silly to take it down one tile at a time when you're removing the drywall anyway. So,
yeah,
and that was a big project. So I got to give you a lot of credit because, I mean, we had even this goofy bar in this living room area and the whole thing was brick. And you tore out, I mean, probably at least 1,000 pounds, maybe 900 pounds of brick. You carried it, threw it all in the trash on top of getting rid of awful cabinets, and there was so much trash. We filled up 3 massive
20-foot trash bins.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
So you were busting your butt.
And that doesn't even include the 1,700 square foot of tile on the floor.
Right.
And then, I mean, there was brick in this, I mean, it was unbelievable.
So there was a lot. I mean, where do we land today? So we've renovated essentially the majority of the downstairs. There's still some finishing that needs to be done. And I think we're at a good place. You know, we're talking about what we want in the long run, for our life, which we'll probably share the full details that next time.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing we'll probably put this on the market before the end of the year, and move on to our next step in the adventure.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I'm sure some people might want to know like how much we put into it and how much it's worth.
Sure.
So, I think we put in around 60, maybe a little bit more than 60,000. So we're in at 350. And we got an appraisal that was not the best appraisal. I think we have better comps that we could get. Appraisal at 455 for the house. And that's not even fully finished. And we're about to get some more things done. So I think that realistically it could be worth around 475. So we got it at 290, and after all of our work we put in, it should be around closer to 475 for this house.
So full year, and we'll make a little bit of profit. I mean, there's capital gains tax because we're not staying for the full 2 years. There's a lot of different
closing costs.
There's a lot of different things. So, you know, I think it's really good for people to understand what they're getting into, and sweat equity is a real thing when it comes to these type of projects. Would we do it again?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I wouldn't do this again. I think that if I didn't have a child, a baby, and I think if... So, I guess I would... The best person, I think, to do this is, like, a family that either... I mean, or a couple, I should say, because you don't want to do this with kids. Or if they're older. I would say a couple that is physically strong and knowledgeable about these type of things. Like, you don't want to just learn about this stuff as you do it. Like,
see, I would question you on older, because your dad is, I mean, I don't want to say his age, I guess, but
he's old. I mean,
it doesn't matter. 50s, late 50s.
No, he's in his almost mid 60s,
and he's in great shape.
Yeah,
like, I don't think age, like, my grandparents are almost like they're well into their 80s.
But the thing is I was doing all the demo and the extraction of all the work of all that stuff. So I think the physical part is very important.
I think just saying physical, I don't think.
Did I not say physically?
Yeah, physical. Strong? I just want to disregard age.
Not age. I'm just saying strong, like strength.
Right, strength. Having, you have to have stamina, and like, also I think getting up on ladders like is a really scary thing.
Yeah.
And that's something I'd shy away from if you can. Like, that's where we just decided to hire people because it's not worth the risk.
I almost fell off two ladders. I fell off one and then almost got thrown off of the other.
And your dad fell off a ladder.
And my dad fell off
one. Before he left the first trip. So all that to say, it can be dangerous. PPE, you know, my background's in corporate real estate, so personal protective, you know, equipment is extremely important. Cover your eyes.
Yeah.
Make sure you're wearing the right type of shoes constantly, yeah. and sun, heat. I mean, things, when you're cutting things, protect your hands. It all sounds silly till you lose a finger, then it's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, protecting yourself, ending the day the way you started is really important. But it does take a lot of time. It generally takes more money than you think it's going to take. But I mean, you know, we're going to walk away from this experience, and we've said it multiple times. We don't regret this decision. It was a really good investment for us. It was a great learning experience. We really value certain qualities about life, you know, that we didn't maybe have perspective on before. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, it reiterized how important friends and family are. Like, especially with having a kid. But I think that was a big thing that I had to learn, is that, like, how important it is to be close to family. Because there's just so much positive effects of being close to your friends and family, things to do, you know, help, etc. Like, I mean, it just brings a lot more happiness, especially when you have a kid that has cousins. And I mean, every time she's been around her cousins, she's had so much fun. So, and that was even when she doesn't even know what she's doing, what's going on.
Well, I mean, I feel like we can just come out and say it. We're alluding to it, but we have decided we're moving back to California, and we're moving back in with your parents, because financially, until we can find something we feel really confident in, that's the best decision for us.
Yeah. So I guess the reasons we came out here were the price of the house. The gas prices were super cheap. It was a safe area to be. We're close to grandparents.
But there are sacrifices in moving out here. Yeah. One being, we don't have the ocean, don't have our friends. It's very hot. There's a lot of bugs. There are like a lot of costs that went into this house. Just like every week, it felt like something broke. Like at one point, our AC broke and it turned out to be a switch. We had to pay someone to come out and look at it. We had the front pipe explode and it cost us like $1,200 to replace.
We had two toilets go broke.
That we had to replace two, and we had the insides replaced of one of them. And then one day it was raining and the entire roof of the last bathroom, the third bathroom, fell through. The roof is leaking. I mean, it was like every single week. We had 100 bees come into the house at one point through a hole.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got them out, thankfully. But when you have a kid and a dog, dealing with things falling apart like this has been less than ideal.
Yes.
And hoping we have another baby, we want to be close to family again, because we have 6 nieces and nephews. And, you know, a big piece of that is they're all between the ages of like 3 and 10. And I honestly feel like that's some of the best parts of childhood, is like, I don't know, 4 to 13, 14. Because after they're 14, they start to get involved with high school. They have their friends, they're too cool for family. This is still like precious time, especially with our daughter, that we're missing out on. And my grandparents are out in California. I love them dearly. And I don't want to spend these next few years, these really precious years, away from them. So there's sacrifices moving back to California. There's high income tax. It's a high cost of living. I mean, I heard that they were talking about taxing on every mile you drive.
Yeah. I mean, the politics in California, I extremely hate them. But, I mean...
Yeah, so there's... The way we feel, there's really no perfect place for us right now. And until we figure that out, we want to be able to be a little bit more flexible and have some cash in our pocket to invest in other things.
Yeah. I think another thing is, the reason that we are getting out is because we don't want to deal with all the other costs that are going to, of things breaking in this house. I think that we've already dealt with so much, and we want to get into something that's more new in the future. So we're going to take our profit that we made from this house, go home and wait for opportunity somewhere, wherever that may be, come up for us, and get into a house that doesn't have all these problems and that we'll have insurance on.
We have insurance on.
No, I mean, like, the company, when you get new construction, they give you, like, warranties. Like
warranties. Yeah, that's different than insurance. But, I mean, you know, to kind of close the whole process, you know, once we decided we were done with this house, we looked around Texas pretty extensively. I mean, we spent 4 or 5 weekends driving around new construction, different houses. We even looked at an auction house. But again, that would be a full fixer-upper. We looked at some places in Temecula, Pomona, Chino Hills.
Chino.
And it just, nothing felt right. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, there's, you know, a presidential election coming up that could change the landscape a little bit. And we want to feel 100% confident in the decision.
Yeah.
And I think with this type of a choice, being on the same page with your partner is like the number one thing.
Yeah.
Because when, you know, you don't want to build resentment. You don't want to move into something and have one person 20% committed and the other one 100% committed. Like, finding something you're both open to, and that doesn't mean you both have to be gung-ho about it. There's compromise always, but anyway, so that's where we landed. So this podcast, the direction we're going with it. So Real Talk with the Rochets, I think, is the name for now that we've landed on. And we want to just have an open dialogue about life. And, you know, we've experienced a lot of judgment for the way our relationship started and has worked out. And our dynamic is different. I work full time and you're this stay at home dad mom.
Yeah.
And it's just unique. And I think that we've always had a different perspective about life. We've never been afraid to take chances. And, you know, we started the conversation talking about stereotypes and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's where a lot of our strength comes from, is we think outside of the box.
Yeah.
And we're willing to listen to each other's ideas and go along with them and just whatever, put ourselves out there.
Yeah. And I think that was like the biggest thing that works for us, is that we both agree to be a little bit more out there on our decision making. And there's just so much of that, like, that's so important to our relationship, because it gives us a lot of opportunities. And I just look at even family, like, some, like, it's, people are, don't want to take those risks. Like, they don't want to take the risk of moving or trying this or that, or anything. Like, they just don't want to, it's not that they're not on the same page, they just don't want to take those risks. And I take risks a lot, and the fact that you're on board with a lot of the decisions that I make, it makes me feel confident in what we're doing, long term. So,
yeah. So anyway, follow along if you want to. If you don't, then bye.
That's okay.
I know Chastity will listen. We have one friend, and if not, we'll just talk to ourselves.
No, we don't. We have more than one friend.
Selfishly, we're taking time away from the baby. The baby's with the grandparents, so this is our quote-unquote free time. So yeah, time for us to connect too. But anyway, I don't know when we'll post the next one. So yeah. Ta-ta for now.
Bye.